Thought Press Network.
Pedro Pimps Pull. Pedro Pimps Pull. All right, we're coming back after actually, we had a shorter hiatus because we were talking about the last time Prometheus, which
Correct.
Was a Kickstarter book that we were sent, and that was pretty interesting. So today we actually have another Kickstarter book, but we're actually back to me recommending stuff to Q. So we're going to start off real quick with that, since it's been a long time since we've been able to hit that up. So for
Yes.
people who might not remember, the last time I gave Q the second volume of The Wicked and the Divine, which for anybody who doesn't remember, you get a story where it's set in modern worlds. You have 12 or 13 gods and goddesses reborn into society. They live for 2 years, and then they die. And the series is kind of this look at fame and how fame changes people. That's a very simplistic way to look at it.
Yeah,
so to give you an idea, they're up to the fifth or sixth volume now, and shit has gotten really fucking complicated. But back to the halcyon days of volume two, when things weren't as complicated. So let's take it off. Q, tell us, what did you think about volume two, Fandemonium?
Okay, I think that a book like this that has such a play on gods and stuff like that, it is definitely something I should not have taken such a gap from reading.
Oh, no.
Because it took me a really long time to get re-engaged into the book, remember what the fuck happened in the last book with other not so important characters that now reappear and had certain moments with the main character of the book. Because, of course, the only thing I remembered was what most affected me, because
yeah.
my favorite character in volume one, spoilers, if you're listening to this, you should have already gotten this spoiled. But and if you listen to our first review, for sure you got it spoiled. But my favorite character was Lucy, and Lucy, quote unquote, dies at the end of volume one. We don't know what's going to happen. If she really dead, is that really something that's happening? So on and so forth. I had originally gone into volume two having thought I had been given spoilers about Lucy's return, because somebody had posted up a picture of a comic strip with Lucy in it.
A single panel.
A single panel. And I was like, oh, fuck, yes. And then, fuck, no, no.
No, no, no.
No.
This is kind of, I guess it's kind of a spoilers for up to now. Lucy dead as fuck.
Yeah, Lucy's super dead.
Yeah.
That is all that Laura is worried about. Laura's the main character of the story. She's the one who was there, basically, when Lucy...
She was the fangirl that, if you remember from the first volume, who was following Lucy around specifically. But this is sort of her dealing with Lucy's death and sort of the feeling that something else is going on here. It's not as simple as just these gods and goddesses being reborn.
Yeah, and then if you have read the first volume and you haven't picked up the second volume for whatever reason or thinking about it... at the end, she snaps her fingers and flame comes out of her fingers. And so she thinks that now with Lucy's death, that she has been given the powers that Lucy has. And so it's this weird internal battle with herself, both trying to figure out what happened to Lucy in the first place, trying to remind herself she's not crazy, that she thought that something had happened. And she thought she was the last of the gods that was missing. She believes that there's only 12, and she was supposed to be the 12th one. And so she thought she was getting powers from Lucy.
Yeah, it's a little more complicated because, yes, she thinks that she is sort of the missing link there. But as you find out, I'll stick to this volume specifically. But yeah, there's sort of a lot of question marks. If I remember correctly, at this point, you haven't been introduced to the entire Pantheon
No.
yet. There are a bunch of people that you haven't met. You meet some of them here. And the Fandemonium, like they call it that, because there's basically a con for fans of the Pantheon.
Yeah.
And that ends up kind of pushing these gods in their sort of intermittent struggles.
Yes.
God, it pushes them to start wondering whether or not they can have more time than the 2 years that they're allotted. Because remember, it's a death sentence.
Right, like, so they automatically know. So it's almost like when you listen to the fact that you might gain God's powers, it sounds fantastic. But in actuality, it's more of a curse. And that's how most of them see it, is it's this curse thing. You know, depending on what their powers are, that might be a curse in itself, what power they were able to gain. And then the fact that they're going to die in 2 years is another thing that kind of sucks. It's like, oh, you get all of this, but then it's gone. And it's over and it's done with.
Well, the other thing, too, is being a god, you basically are erased. Like, whoever you were before then
is gone.
I mean, you're technically more fused. It's more of a fusion because you have your memories of what happened before, but you are more. Like, whoever you were before kind of doesn't matter anymore.
Yeah. And that takes into a very important – that takes into account very important later on in this particular volume. So I will say that the beginning of the volume took a while to get into. For me, it had a very slow pickup to where I had remembered the other volume had left off. I guess it's the part of me that was so intrigued in that aspect of the story that wanted answers to that faster, mm-hmm. or just getting to the point of that faster than what ended up happening. As always, the art is always beautiful. You can't complain about the art. The way they break down certain scenes specific to certain gods of this pantheon is fantastic. Like when you're with
Dionysus. Remember
Dionysus
yes.
is fantastic. It breaks down into numbered sequences.
They play a lot. So it's sort of everybody takes for granted like how comics are supposed to be presented. But since obviously you're playing with like other or like above worldly powers here, like they definitely do a lot of interesting things where you'll have what looks like a standard breakdown that you'll change the page and then you'll get this like amazing burst of color and how they end up presenting everything, like breaking it down in certain ways. Like it's very difficult to describe. Like this is definitely why this works so well as a comic, because you're playing around anytime any medium plays around with how it's presented, I fucking love it.
Oh, I love it about the comic book. I actually love that sometimes more than what's actually going on in the comic book. Like that scene with Dionysus, the way that it's broken down, I want you to imagine like film frames.
Yes.
And it's cut into like four film frames, like boom, 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 boom. But you're at a party, so I almost want you to also imagine that you're doing that to a beat. You know, like, so it is very engulfing. And I do enjoy that even the word bubbles differ depending on the god in which you're speaking to. And that makes it very easy to remember when later on you've met this god again and you may have forgotten who they were. You'll remember the color that was chosen for their text. You will remember the color that was chosen for their text box, and that makes it easier.
It's a good shortcut because there's a lot, like, and the complication really starts with this volume of introducing more of the gods and how the story ends up taking its twists and turns. That's one of the shortcuts that you can easily remember certain people by, like, okay, this is what their text box look like. Some of them even speak differently. They do a good job of like mixing
dialect and both vocabulary and then visual. And I, who am the kind of person that like if I write something down and remember it, I have that kind of photographic memory. That helped me a lot without having to go back and go, oh, what god was that again? Oh, okay, what god was that again? There's one shot though that they made the god look straight up like Prince.
Yes.
Yo, he looked like I looked at this and I was like, is this the artist formerly known as Prince who is now the god formerly known? Yes.
Inan is basically straight Prince. Up fucking Prince.
Yeah.
I fucking love it.
It was good, but there was this one shot when he first pops up and I was just like, this is Prince. And he's in the rain in a purple suit.
I'm showing her the shot because it's like one of my favorite panels in the whole run.
It's purple rain.
I love it. Oh god, it's so good.
It's so good. So just to get into the meat and potatoes of the actual comic book, once it picked up halfway in this volume, then I sped through the rest of it because then we got into what was going on. So what ends up happening is they end up thinking that the people behind the death of Lucy are actual two fans that are super into the pantheon and the whole fanatic aspect of it. And so she, Laura, ends up getting with Cassandra, who is the known reporter and like...
She's got the pantheon beat.
Yeah. So she pairs up with her to try and figure out if they can find out who is behind the death of Lucy. And then shit gets cray.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Because then shit gets cray because Cassandra ends up getting an interview with... I can never pronounce her name.
Oh, Ananke?
Yes, yeah. Ananke, which is the keeper and the carer of all of these gods in the pantheon. It is her responsibility to find them. It is her responsibility, if I'm not mistaken,
to raise them
yeah. and to watch over them.
Like a mother.
Right, for the next 2 years while they exist. And so you finally get Cassandra in front of her, and you come to find out that actually Cassandra's the 12th god. And now she's this.
I've forgotten they did this early because that is a thing that happens, and I couldn't remember if it happened in this volume or the next volume.
Oh no, yeah, it happens in this volume before the bombshell that is the ending of it.
Yeah.
So that for me was a bombshell because you have Cassandra who plays this character who doesn't really believe in it, but
she's kind of an abrasive reporter, you know.
Yeah, and she's kind of like skeptical about the whole fucking thing.
Oh, not kind of. She's absolutely 100%.
She's absolutely skeptical about it. But she partners up with Laura anyways. I almost feel like your typical reporter. I'm gonna believe in your crazy bullshit just so that I can prove how wrong you are about your crazy bullshit.
What is it? The old reporter's trust but verify. She's like, well, there's very little trust there. It's more like, okay, I'm just going to verify.
Yeah, and so it's kind of a nice spin when she ends up being the 12th god.
Yeah.
Now this
the doubting Thomas, so to speak.
Yeah, and so that was interesting, and then it's almost because she's this like self-loathing god.
Well,
what's also
interesting, if I remember, she's the Furies,
she's
Fates.
The three. Yeah, she's the all-seeing.
Yeah.
She's the all-seeing god. And all telling. And so, of course, they all have to go to concert and they're all supposed to sing and they're all supposed to do this crazy shit because they're like rock stars. And she's pissed off because she gets on stage at, of course, out of all things, their convention is called the Ragnarok, which is ironic with Thor Ragnarok coming out now. Anyways, it was just like, I read that and I was like, my worlds are colliding. And so she goes on stage and she's like, basically, like, telling the audience what's up in what she believes Cassandra would believe, but they all love her anyway. So she gets off stage and she's, like, crying in her fucking green room. She's like, nobody's paying attention to me. Nobody's listening.
Cassandra, I find Cassandra really interesting because, like, they really play her as, like, a really woke reporter. And, you know, she's got... Cassandra's very interesting because I believe she's trans. I don't remember if she's trans or there was another reporter.
I don't remember either. I'm sad that I don't remember this, but it's been a really long time since I read the first volume.
Yeah.
But
what's interesting is they play her as like the woke character. So she gets a lot of really amusing scenes where like people are acting like a fucking fool and she has to come in and be like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Yeah, and I loved her character for that aspect of it. And so again, it was interesting for her to flip. But this, again, then turns Laura into this more self-loathing, like, I thought
Super
I was
mopey,
the
yeah.
god.
I thought I was special.
Yeah, I thought it was me. That's why everybody talks to me. That's why everybody's into me. Yep. And everybody comes to me. And then she's not. So that was interesting. I do think that it's got a really slow progression. I think that it started off really slow. And I think that... and I've heard other people talk about later volumes with this comic book, in that it's convoluted and confusion gets overwhelming.
At the moment, it's pretty... Well, at the moment, they've just finished like a major arc, like a major thing, and they're kind of trying to figure out what goes on next. So they're left kind of floating.
Right.
But up to the end of it, I mean, it's no more convoluted than any other major comic book series. I'm interested once you get to the third volume and you see how things pick up. Especially with how this ends, it's interesting to show you how things actually were versus what was presented.
Okay, because I fear right now, see, this volume has left in the same cliffhanger as the first volume did. And I know how disappointing the pickup of volume 2 for that cliffhanger in volume 1 was, that I feared volume 3 would leave me in this same dull moment in the beginning and have
it's
to
not
pick
as bad
back up.
It's not as bad as the first two volumes.
Okay, which because that was a problem for me. I needed a faster pick me up for this particular type of comic book, for this particular type of series. Again, it was fine once I started to pick up on those little nuances. I was having issues remembering what characters and what gods did what. Their visual cues was a lot more helpful with me being able to pick up after that. I still have trouble pronouncing some of their names. I do think that it's funny, Pedro, you mentioned this earlier. The concept that if they kill other gods, they will add time to their lives.
That's what they think.
Yes. Well,
Do we want to go full spoilers?
Yeah,
here?
we might as well go full spoilers.
You basically find out that the real villain behind here is Ananke. Like the woman who's trying to like usher and control them and mother them is actually the one trying to control things. And at the very end of this volume, Laura does get ascends. She becomes Persephone.
Yes.
And right after she ascends, Ananke blows her head off,
yep.
And then kills her family and lights the house on fire. That's how the volume ends.
Yes.
You end up finding out in the next volume, they elaborate more about why she did that, but you also end up seeing how she is playing the gods and goddesses against each other.
Well, she ends up doing that to Baphomet. Baphomet. She does that to Baphomet because while you're reading this volume, Laura confronts Baphomet and is basically saying, like, oh, somebody lied about an alibi for you at the time of Lucy's death. And he actually questions it, like, why would you lie? Like, him knowing that he had nothing to do with Lucy's murder. And he ends up going to see Ananke, and she tells him, you could have, because only you have the power to kill other gods. And I knew that something was weird with that in the beginning.
That's when you start picking up, like,
because it just didn't make sense. Because here's what happens. So Ananke comes up, and Baphomet, she tells him, you have the power to kill other gods. You are the only one that whom I'm going to tell that if you kill other gods, time will be added to your two-year thing. And I want nobody else to know that because you're the only one powerful to do that. That already doesn't make sense. If you were the keeper of all of these gods, why would you tell this one big secret to supposedly the only god who can kill all these other gods? So you're basically planting this seed in his head as a scapegoat for what it is that you're really doing behind closed doors, because you've told somebody who's vain enough to want to live for a lot longer in this life that he's created or has for himself.
Well, you also get the idea, and there is more that you find out about Baphomet later, but I feel pretty badly for Baphomet, because you definitely get the feel that he is way out of his element in all this, and he is scared, and he doesn't participate in the same way that the other gods do. So later on, you kind of see that really ends up negatively affecting him.
And I kind of see it. So I already knew that something was up with Ananke before that, and then Baphomet I felt bad for, because I'm watching him fight with himself.
Yeah.
I'm watching him fight with who he was before Baphomet.
Yes.
And what Baphomet does to him. And that watching, and they do again another beautiful way of Baphomet speaking, and when it's really the guy he was before Baphomet talking. He's having these moments where he doesn't want to do certain things, and Baphomet's like, no, go fucking do them.
This is how we fucking
do it. This is how we're supposed to do things. And he's like, okay, but I can't, so you're going to have to help me. And then, boom, he becomes this monster and this shit to be able to do it. But it's that internal struggle that I'm watching happen. And then, yes, Ananke turns Laura into Persephone, right?
Yep.
And then you don't even, it's not even 2 seconds, like 2 seconds. And then she's gone. She's just gone. So,
yeah.
I mean,
it's not clear after the end of this volume, but there is obviously way more that goes into that.
I mean, I would assume so. You didn't have me follow this fucking character.
Yeah, let me tell you, after I read this volume in one day, and then afterward I'm like, well, that's another 6 fucking months I'm going to have to wait to find out what happened.
So I thought it was good. It's still one of these things that I would probably not read issue to issue.
No, I would not be able to read this issue to issue.
I still stand by that. I know that there are people out there that listen to Pedro Pimps Pulp and the Talking Geek that have read this issue to issue. Power to you. I could see where I would have lost interest not reading the stories back to back.
This works arc to arc, and it's kind of one of the reasons why I like how Image does their stuff, especially with their more famous creators, is that the creators are able to structure arc to arc, so it works in trade format. In a lot of cases, I would prefer not to read it. It's actually one of the reasons why I do like, if you remember Fatale, the way that Ed Brubaker does his stuff. He does arc to arc, but I still find his individual issues have enough to keep me going. Because I'm his last two major series, I've been following. Oh my god, what the hell was the Hollywood one? The current one is called "To Kill or Be Killed." That one is working great issue to issue. Jesus Christ, I can't remember what the Hollywood one. The other one was like a noir Hollywood story set in the 40s. That one also had like real big overarching things that he was kind of dealing with, but that one also worked issue to issue. This and Saga are two ones where I would be too frustrated issue to issue, and it's better for me to wait to just get the whole shebang in one, just bam!
I would actually say, Well, Saga, I only read it volume-wise, and that's how I've continued to read it. So,
it reads
and
better.
I'm super behind. I'm super behind on Saga.
I got that, baby. Don't you worry, girl.
I got
girl.
You. But Wicked and Divine, definitely something to read volume by volume. You say it's up to volume 5, so you could definitely surpass
me. Oh, shit's happened.
At the moment. Will, if you're listening to this, I know I saw you picked up volume 1 and volume 2 over at Korka Comics over the weekend. So I hope you enjoy it. I think that you will. And you're going to have what I didn't have, which is 2 volumes back to back to just go into this one fluid story. I'm noticing that becomes an issue for me because I'm a novel reader.
Yes.
And so I almost want a full story, or I want to be intrigued enough to keep me going. Give me enough of a juice and I will keep it going until the next one comes out and the next one comes out. I can see that if you're a novel reader, that can be a harsh thing for you to do once you try to go into comic books where you're having to wait and get another story. Especially if you're a novel reader, you're not a trilogy novel reader where you're used to waiting 2 or 3 years until the next book comes out. But I dug it. I liked it. I didn't think I was going to. I thought reading it and how long it took me to get into it and finish it, because I've been sitting on that book for almost...
It's like 8 months.
8 months.
Yeah.
Between the wedding, which is what the reason I didn't read it before, and then it was every time I would pick it up, I was like, who are these people again? Like, who the fuck are them, and why do I care?
This really could use some writers are really good at putting in panels in the beginning to remind you of who the characters are. This could definitely help with that.
I think that is the only, they do so good everywhere else, because even at the beginning of your issue to issue, you'll see a picture of a god that maybe you hadn't been introduced to, that you're going to be introduced to later. The color of the pantheon of the god you're messing with is colored at the beginning. If you catch that, you'll start to catch that as you're reading on. But they could use a quick summary page, especially when it's a volume. That means you've already done this, like in the next volume, front page.
Definitely, you know, there's almost no excuse for them not to do it
in a trade. It's there's no excuce in an issue. Maybe I get it. You've got space. You've got timing, deadlines, and stuff like that. That was something that I thoroughly enjoyed in Invincible Iron Man pre Secret Wars. The front page was completed objectives, and it was things he did in the issues before, things still working on, and it's what's jumping you forward.
Cool. Okay.
And so that, and I mean, it was super quick. It was like Friday's notes, and it was just like 4 little bullet points, like why can I still not find Rhodey? Like, it was stupid. And it, like, his own, don't be late to meeting Mary Jane, point number 2, seriously, don't be late. You know, like, it was things like that, but it reminded you, okay, yeah, that's right, that's exactly what happened. Those are the important parts of what happened in the earlier issues. And I think that something like Wicked and Divine, that is so complex with so many different characters, and the fact that they were gods but they were also other, because now Cassandra has another name which I also can't pronounce, you have Laura who's now Persephone, you had like so many things that you should have like a character chart, like, yo, don't forget that this is the god that does this, or this is the god that does that.
Well,
I think
luckily
that
for a lot of them, they're playing with common, like, everybody knows who Woden is.
Yeah.
Not everybody knows who Amaterasu is. That one's kind of a bigger Baphomet people kind of know. The Morrigan would be candy to kind of know.
Yeah. Yeah,
especially because Morrigan's got 3 different personalities.
Well, he's a kid now. She's a kid now.
No. The Morrigan, that's Baphomet's girlfriend.
Right. Who? You're right.
There is a kid. Fuck, I can't remember.
Who also plays another character who originally was something else.
Shit, what the fuck was the kid's name? Yeah, we have the issue in front of us. But but like they're typically playing with a lot of most people know who Dionysus is. Like, you're playing with a lot of common ones, but it would help for, like, for example, Inan. I don't know who Inan is.
I don't know who Inan is. I don't even know who Baal is.
Huh?
Who's I don't remember Baal.
I believe that's an Egyptian cat god, which is why she's super fucking horny and very cat-like.
Okay.
They dive into her in some of the later books. That's the thing, is later on they will, when they get guest artists in, they'll do books or issues that are dedicated to individual gods, so that you find out how they got into their positions, and kind of a good holding pattern while they were trying to take a break.
You see, so the child is
I'm gonna say it was like a knowledge god.
I think so, but
shit, I'm trying to remember. I'm trying to use the old noggin to remember that one, but I can't.
I can't even remember. Minerva.
Oh, Minerva. Okay,
it's Minerva, but it's played by like what looks like a young boy.
I think it's a young girl.
I know, but it looks like a boy.
Yeah,
like, it definitely looks like a boy.
Maybe
but
it's a boy. I gotta go back to that.
Yeah, I gotta go back, but and because they never talk about sex in that aspect in the comic book. But either way, I think that it would be good to have like a reference guide before each particular volume, especially if you're going a long way. Obviously not necessary if you're somebody who's really into the Wicked and Divine, but if you're not and you're gonna be jumping around and kind of picking it up when you can, Yeah. Little notes.
So
to the creators.
For the next one, you what are is my be next getting one? The first volume of Manhattan Projects.
Yes.
It's a personal favorite of mine. It is roughly, real quick, imagine that the Manhattan Project, the U.S. experiment to create the first atom bomb. Imagine if that was just a cover, and there are multiple projects going on that are pretty fucked up. And I will give you this interesting thing. The art is not going to be pretty.
Okay.
This is purposely made to be ugly because people are doing ugly things. But also these characters are all based off of historical. Like Albert Einstein is a character in this.
Okay.
And most of these characters look like facsimiles of the people they're supposed to be, but twisted. And you will get why they're twisted very quickly. The tagline for the series is science, period. Bad, period.
Okay. Okay, I'm into it. I've heard things about it with you before, so it's something that I like all of that weird detective-y.
You will like it because
shit.
there are definitely some stuff where they're investigating stuff. So it has a very gritty feel that I know you're used to it with your true crime stuff.
Fantastic. Now what we're gonna do is we're gonna get into another comic book single shot issue that we were given for a Kickstarter that's coming out. And for those of you who may be listening to this, if you have a comic book or a Kickstarter that you're going to be having come out that you want us to review to kind of help pump out your Kickstarter, please send them our way. You can email us your PDF files at thetalkinggeek@gmail.com, and we will review it for you. And 9 out of 10 times, also go ahead and pump some money into your Kickstarter. So
yeah.
You're always welcome to do that. So we got contacted. Actually, we got an email from Free Fantasy Comics, which is somebody we follow on Twitter, who ended up sending us a book called The Last Arrival, which is written by Daniel Prim, pencil and inking by I don't want to butcher your names, but you guys have amazing names, but also hard to pronounce ones. So your pencil and inking was done by Gergely Sabo.
Yeah, I can't pronounce that either.
But colors, which you have an amazing name, is Sabrina Maharita, and lettering by Tobin Rassicott. I hope I didn't butcher your names. If you did, I'm sorry. But I wanted to give credit to everybody who had a piece of this
props.
Book. And just a quick synopsis of this is you have five aliens who are fleeing their planet desperately to seek a new planet that they can all go to and survive. That's like as basic.
Pretty much.
I mean, it's as basic as I can possibly get.
And you could tell that these are different species, so they're kind of dealing with cohabitation. You could tell there's a lot of stuff left over from their original planet that they're kind of dealing with.
Yes.
And the location that they end up landing on, we might as well just talk about it straight up.
Might as well.
It's Earth.
It's Earth.
It's our planet, and it's pretty fucked up. This is clearly way post-apocalypse.
Super.
No humans. Everything's like a fucking trash heap.
Yeah, everything looks like crap. Or maybe.
Yes.
Mysteriously,
things might happen.
Yeah. Yeah, that's basically it. So you have these five characters ranging in ages. You have like a younger character, which is, I believe, Om is her name. It's the young little kid that wants to play.
The youngest kid, yeah.
The youngest kid that wants to play. You have what I thought originally was going to be your lead character, because it's the first character you're introduced to in the comic book, which is Olok, who's like the historian. He's always watching and listening to everything that's happened in his world prior, who's close enough to the age of Om, but not that young and innocent and
clearly annoyed by the kid.
Right. So I want to say he's in his preteen teen age because he's annoyed by the he's got that angst that he's annoyed by this child. But just still young enough that he doesn't meet the other characters, which is Akrok, Rick. I don't know how to pronounce
it. Like Lyric with an extra R, I think.
Yeah, exactly. And Yuan, okay? Yuan is the one who's brought them all onto his tower ship and is the one who's sending them to Earth with him. And they're supposed to go and check the environment to see if they can find anything that is going to be valuable for them to bring their people over, basically. It's the first issue, so it's hard for really for us to establish too much without spoiling it. I will say that it gave me a Saga vibe, that different aliens from different species.
This definitely has a Saga, Star Trek-esque vibe to it. The thing that I found interesting about it is I don't know why I have this problem with a lot of series, but if I don't have a series that has at least one human character, I find it difficult to kind of connect with like a lot of aliens unless you do a good job. And what I found, like, this is both kind of like the negative and the positive. Well, really, the negative is just more just like how I perceive stuff.
Right.
This is very dialogue light. There's a lot of like really nice vistas. Like the art is like really, really nice, very abstract. Obviously, you're dealing with aliens, you're not dealing with humans. So.
Right.
And the coloration is really, really good.
The colors mm-hmm. are beautiful.
Yeah.
That is something that I haven't gotten in a lot of comic books, with the exception of Saga. And I would say The Wicked and Divine.
And The Wicked and Divine uses color very well,
uses
too.
Color very, very well. Everything else is always grit, very dark. Everything else that I read
more
is usually...
More muted colors.
More muted colors. This is very vibrant.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very vibrant. And I like that each character has its own set of vibrant colors that match it in a way. I have yet to see if that's going to have anything to do with their character development or their own story arcs, but you know, Olok is blues, is a blue, and Om is this orangey yellow, which for me matched her personality because she's vibrant and she's young and she's little.
Yeah.
So certain things like that matched me. And again, I'm not one, I can understand what you have to say with regards to a needing somebody that you can connect to. But I don't think that that's necessarily out of the game in this particular comic.
But I think the compliment that I wanted to give was that even though I kind of have that difficulty sometimes, like I'm still like following what's
going
on.
Well, what I mean
here.
Is actually not so much that that it's not going to happen here. I think that we have yet to see whether or not there's going to be a human character.
Oh, yeah,
here.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm just talking about just like starting right out of the gate. Like,
yeah, yeah. They definitely didn't start out of the gate with it, but I think that there's enough of a cliffhanger that they leave in the first issue that we read that you may or may not have something that may or may not have been left behind on Earth, because they managed to get themselves into a room on Earth that, from what I could tell in a single shot, had something suspending in air that was a weird question.
Yeah.
And then they walked into another room that looked a little bit more kept up than the rest of the planet that they had already seen. I'm trying to say things without saying things.
Yeah, you're trying to be a little...
Well, because it's the only first issue, so I don't want to give it away. And we're going to have to wait for the next one because it's a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
So I will say that I was intrigued enough to read it. The art, for me, was really pretty. And different from, like I said, most of the things that I was reading.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this whole... This priestess, or she was once a priestess, has these two beautiful panels worth of monologue that I thought was really nice. And it starts off with she wants to talk about how beings are capable of changing reality through the will of their minds, and she goes into this whole kind of like diatribe of it, but it was beautiful and it wasn't over the top like most superhero monologues, villain monologues are.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that it was done pretty, and I don't want to give it away. Just know that when you get to that part where it says we are beings who are capable of changing reality, know that that's what I'm talking about when you read the issue. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Yeah.
At first, when I got the PDF, it was like 50 pages, and I was like, wow, it's a lot for the first issue. But the last 5 or 6 pages is just art, and it was beautiful, really pretty art. So I know that the guy who's been writing this has had the idea, that Daniel apparently had the idea to do this comic book, I want to say 10 plus years ago.
Yeah. The little forward that he's got.
Yeah, he's got a beautiful forward that talks about it, and then he moved, and it kind of reawoke him wanting to write this. He says he wrote a bunch of crap, like most writers. You have to write crap before you get to the good shit.
Well,
nobody
yeah.
just... I mean, some people do, and just write God-worthy shit the minute that they put their pen to pad. None of us...
That's very rare.
Very, very rare. And sometimes it happens once for all of us, and then never again we have to go through the shit. So I liked his forward. Yes, I read it, by the way, because not a lot of people do, but
yeah,
I read it too. And I thought it was good. I thought it was a good starting point. I would definitely want to see what another issue of this would go. I want to see if it plays with things in a unique fashion, because there are a lot of comic books that have to do with worlds having to leave their world to go to another world to find solace or peace or to just survive. I think that this is unique in the sense that they're coming to Earth, as opposed to Earth leaving to do these things, or just another random planet. I like that. That's familiar for me.
Yeah.
Like, if you come and bring it to Earth, now it's universal.
Now I'm curious. See, that was the other thing, too. With them coming to Earth, I'm like, I kind of had the idea they were doing that, because they were just the talk. Like, he was talking enough around it where I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, you're dancing around the bush. I know what the bush is. But it was fine. But then when, and like you said, like, oh, it doesn't have like a human in it, but yet it's familiar because it's Earth and it's where we're from. So I can see where
enough
I'm like, it's got enough where I could be like, well, if you're talking about Earth shit, I'm going to know what you're talking about. So I don't know how it will help you on your weird, crazy alien planets. But I mean, I know what it is here. And I found that interesting enough. It reminded me also a little bit of WALL-E. I don't know why, but like the idea
I can see where WALL-E might.
That like Earth is ready to, for you to come back and do some crazy shit too. I'm also interested to see if it's going to touch at all at what happened to Earth and why Earth ended up losing its inhabitants or why they were forced to leave. Like, I wonder if the comic book will touch on that because they question it enough at the beginning, like, oh, there's nothing here, there's nobody here, and he was like, that worries me. Like, if this was all at one point livable, why did they all leave and why are we now coming here if it's not livable, and things like that. So it was an interesting comic book. I definitely would say to check it out on Kickstarter. Definitely worth for me reading the second issue. It's something I would definitely read a second issue of. I liked where the characters are going. I thought that the art was beautiful. I can see the beginnings of character arcs, and I always appreciate that. I can see where you're already getting asking yourself if you should trust certain characters off the very first issue, with certain lines that were said in dialogue. I liked that you're automatically creating rifts in the first issue between one character and another. Olak has that moment with Ohm where he kind of is sick of her being annoying and wanting to play and kicks her out, but then she runs away, so now everybody's worried. Like, I like that there's already establishing some sort of connection and both divide within a group when we just met all of these characters. And I thought that was well done for a first issue.
Good way to get things started and show that things are going to get acrimonious at some point.
Exactly. So I enjoyed it. I think their Kickstarter launches on August 21st. Again, the name of the comic book is The Last Arrival, and the writer is Daniel Prim. You guys make sure you check that out. Let people know what's going on. Get the first issue in your hands, even if it's a digital copy. I promise you will enjoy it. And you'll see what the second one is like. We did the same thing with Prometheus, another good one. Send in your comics. Also, I know I want to say this because we tend to troll a lot of things, and we haven't trolled the two issues that we were given on for Kickstarters. One, I don't want to troll them, but two, don't think that we won't. Like, if you give me one, I don't.
Well,
like,
look, here's the other thing too. Like, if you're gonna send something in, like, I'll give criticisms. Like, I gave criticisms, but part of the fun of trolling is that, like, we're trolling people who are making way more fucking money than we are.
Yeah. I did, but I was talking to somebody and they were like, oh, you said really nice things about a comic book. You know that most, you know, that we don't know. Did you do that on purpose? And I wanted to be like, yes and no. No, I didn't do it on purpose. I actually thoroughly enjoyed the comic book.
Yeah.
But I'm also not going to rip into someone's asshole.
We're not going to be a dick.
Yeah, like
that?
I'm not going to be a dick. I was like, if you expected me to hate on it just because it's somebody's independent project, you were wrong. I'm gonna be honest. If I didn't like something, I would have said it. At least on that aspect, I will be extremely honest. So know that if you are sending us your copies, your digital copies, or your comic books to review before a Kickstarter, we will be not assholes, but we'll be real with you. Just so happens that for me right now, The Last Arrival and Prometheus were both books thought were really entertaining, and two projects that I would definitely back. I've already backed Prometheus, and as soon as this Kickstarter launch, I'll be backing this one as well. As a matter of fact, we'll be having an update on the Prometheus review because we will be getting in the mail the second issue perk and a bonus. I spoke to him, and he said he was going to be sending us a double issue together. So I'm interested to see where the next one is going. And that was pretty much it. So that was Pedro Pimp's Pulp. Manhattan Projects is what I'm reading next.
You got some bad science coming up.
For those of you who have been following my delayed comic book reading, I literally spent my entire Sunday reading as much as I possibly freaking could.
I think I have one of those days coming up pretty soon.
I have now officially caught up for what I own with Invincible Iron Man. I caught up with what I own of International Iron Man. I went on an Iron Man binge is really what I did. Because it's all I'm reading.
Wearing
right
an
now.
Iron Man shirt, too.
I am. I'm reading my Iron Man shirt for two reasons. One, I don't own a Game of Thrones shirt. And I figured that because I would go into House Stark in Game of Thrones, I would wear my Tony Stark shirt, and it fits, at least for me. But yeah, send us all stuff. Send us a whole bunch of shit if you want us to read more stuff. I promise you, I'm really good at reading one issues.
Single
issues, easy peasy. Volumes, I'm getting better at. I will definitely be reading more of that. And next time we do a Pedro Pimps Pulp, I will hopefully have a trade that I will be giving to you.
I would like that, yes. Bear.
Did you ever read Superior Iron Man?
Yes, I did.
Yeah,
we
you did.
About
That's
it.
The one we talked about, right? I will have another one, and I promise it won't be Iron Man.
I'm fine with Iron Man.
Yeah. But yeah, this was fun. And I finished The Wicked and Divine, so I'm looking forward to the next one. Till next time.
Peace.
Later.
Yeah. Yeah. We sell crack to our own out the back of our homes. We smell the musk of the dusk and the crack of the dawn. We go through episodes too, like Attack of the Clones. What till we break a bag and you hear the crack of the bone? To get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. We commute the computer, spirits stay mute while your ego spread rumors. We survivalists turn to consumers. Just to get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. Why some people gotta live in a trailer? Cause like a sailor, I paint a picture with a pen like Norman Mailer. Me and Wella raised three daughters all by herself with no help. I think about the struggle and I find the strength of myself. These words melt in my mouth, they hot like the jail cell in the south before my nigga core bailed me out. But to get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by. I'm do or die like Best Stars. See the red sky out the window of the red eye, the lead flies, the G-Rap shit, living the land.
I die more. Smoke trees and we stay drunk. Yo, our activism attacking the system. The blacks and Latins in prison. Numbers in prison. They victim black in the vision. Shit and all they got is rapping to listen to. I let them know we missing you. Your love is unconditional. Even when the condition is critical. When the living is miserable. Your position is pivotal. I ain't bullshitting you now. Why would I lie? Just to get by. Just to get by. Get fly. The TV got us reaching for stars. Not the ones between Venus and Mars. The ones to be reading for parts. Penis enlarged, Saturday, Sunday, Sunday morning at the feet of the Father. They need something to rely on. We get high on the types of drugs when all you really need is love.
Just to get by, just to get by, just to get by, just to get by.
My pants sing like John Lennon. Imagine all the people watch me rock like Paul McCartney from now until the last Beatle drop.
What?
Even the side, the best people you find, stronger people than me.